Welcome back to the Buffalo Bread Podcast. Dan, we were too excited. We were too excited to just to let this one sit until our usual Thursday, Friday, Saturday recording window.
Breaking all the rules, man.
Breaking all the rules. Shattering expectations, just blowing up, you know, everything that has been seen from us before. Because, you know, it is just over 24 hours since the Buffalo Bills defeated the Jacksonville Jaguars in Jacksonville to the tune of a 27-24 victory. All of it on the back, the knee, the head, and the hand, all shattered parts.
Don't forget the foot he was limping in with.
And the already broken foot of Joshua Patrick Allen. You know, there's a lot more in this. I think Trey White has something to say for this game. I think Cole, your boy Cole has something to say for this game.
That's my dude, man. That's my dude. I've been on that bandwagon since the draft.
The ageless wonder. Shaq Thompson has something to say for this, and Greg Rousseau showing that he might be actually deserving of the contract I didn't think he was deserving of really showed out in this game. We had a lot of guys to point to that made this thing happen, but most of all, Josh Allen. Dan, yes. Where are you at in the vibescape?
Vibes are high right now, and I'm also a little bit nervous because I said openly on this preview pod that we did for this game that if the Bills won this game, they were going to go to the Super Bowl. Like, this is a team that is either going to lose and whimper out in the first round, or they're going to go all the way. Now I am going to watch with even more anxiety as I see the Bills try to carry through on that particular prediction. JJ, I want to talk about all the guys that you mentioned because I think they were key cogs in this wheel. I want to add one more, and this is not one that we usually talk about on this pod in glowing terms. Sean McDermott. He was nails is a decision maker, absolute nails in this game. And I think he deserves some flowers for this too. But this whole thing starts with Joshua Patrick Allen, man. We had talked in the pregame pod. We had both shown some concern because the last time that we had actually seen Josh play was that Philadelphia Eagles game where we both thought it was honestly his worst game of the season from a decision-making standpoint, from a mechanical standpoint, like he wasn't layering his throws, throwing with touch, missing open windows. And you and I both always have hope that Josh Allen is going to be the one that'll lead this team to the promised land. But we both had, I think, trepidation, I think rightfully so, because we had yet to see him play a complete game over four quarters at any point this season. JJ, he played an efficient, complete game across all four quarters this particular game against Jacksonville at the perfect time.
Yeah, his we joked a little bit about his self-scouting, his you know, vision quest he went through to find his way back to himself, you know,
his darkness retreat.
I just pictured Josh Allen holding a steaming cup of some nondiscreet, you know, warm liquid and staring off into like through a rainy like pane of glass and being like, who am I? But it worked. He took those underneath throws. He took what the defense was giving him. He didn't have any turnover worthy plays that I saw, not in except for when his knee got turned inside out and he dropped the ball, but he was already down at that point. And the goal line, Josh Allen looked like he was locked into kind of Superman mode. And if that is what we see throughout this playoffs, all he needs is a little bit of stoutness or some splash plays from the defense. And I think they could go all the way to the chip.
And dude, that's the formula for this Buffalo Bills team. It is Josh playing with efficiency, taking shots when needed, making good decisions, taking care of the ball, which I know we had a turnover in this game, but that was on special teams with Ray Davis. The Buffalo Bills limited what had been a turnover hungry and turnover opportunistic defense in Jacksonville, all on the back of Josh making really sound and solid decisions. Got to give some credit to, I can't believe I'm going to say this, to his patience with the Joe Brady scheme in this particular game. Joe Brady calls, I think, a very deliberate game. Wouldn't call him creative. I wouldn't call him high variation. He is a guy that plans progress into all of his game scripts, though. All that stuff that we talked about with regard to play action for the tight ends, we didn't see it in any meaningful way until they needed it the most in the fourth quarter, right? And I think it's still valid to criticize some of that stuff. It's valid to bring up frustrations like, why can't we do both? Why can't we have a very intentional game plan that varies a little bit more frequently in the game as opposed to having these very clear benchmarks within the game script for when we're going to change things up? And to me, I think from what I had seen, that had been the biggest frustration for Josh at a lot of times is that he was not going along with that kind of plotting path. This particular game, he did what we asked him to do. Dance with who got you there. Do what got you guys there. We don't agree with the scheme, but just buy into it by taking the checkdowns. And I think most importantly, by just peppering Khalil Shakir early and often in that game with some of those screen targets and things like that, it actually opened up a lot of the downfield shots we saw later in the game, particularly in the fourth quarter. And that screen game was so important here, JJ, because the linebacking core, the safeties for Jacksonville, they were so tight in the box. They were pot committed to stopping the run. Khalil Shakir, they basically became an extension of the run game and still allowed Brady's scheme to progress in the way it needed to unlock the opportunities he wanted to late in the game. And that is credit to Josh for buying in, playing within that particular scheme, playing on time, and making sure that those opportunities availed themselves in the way the game plan was scripted.
Yeah, absolutely. I think of it, I don't know how much experience you have with playing like fighting games, right? Like your Street Fighters.
I have a lot.
Yeah, your Street Fighters, your Tekkens, your et ceteras, your Mortal Kombat if you're into the gore.
Super Smash Brothers if you're not.
Super Smash Brothers if you're not, yeah. But the Joe Brady scheme that we've seen over the full season, it feels a lot like you're building your super bar, right?
Yes.
It's like, oh, I got to do this, then I got to do this, then I got to do this. I'm building up my super bar so I can unleash this, right?
Yes.
And that this is like a one move combo that ends the match. And that was the Dalton Kincaid touchdown, right? It was, they faked the Khalil Shakir screen that at that point, I think they had 10 targets to Shakir that moment in the game. They faked the Khalil Shakir screen. Dalton Kincaid looked like he just half-assed a block, but just slipped out into open space for that corner touchdown. And Josh was over the back shoulder throw. The super bar had been built. I think a lot of the times we've seen Josh Allen look inefficient this season so far, the games that he like, it felt like the offense was mired in mud. He was trying too hard to hit the decoys and not taking the design of the play to build the super bar, right?
Yes.
Like he was like, okay, I'm just going to try to yoink this thing 40 yards down the field outside to Keon Coleman, even though on that game or on that play in that route, Keon's job was to run off the safety, right? Like just use, you know, too arrogant maybe with the ball, too much trust in some of the guys. But it did look like in this game, he was trying to play within structure. That's never been his forte. So
that's right. FTN has not released their full stat package at the end of this game. I'm going to be very curious to see what his first read throw percentage was, because we talked about this pregame. Trevor Lawrence was a QB who was masterful at the line of scrimmage, or at least had been in the second half of the season, and was trusting within the scheme that Leon Cohen built to the tune of having the third most pass attempts to his first read in the entire league. Josh was 22nd in that particular category. I will bet you, though, that his first read percentage takes a big jump in this game, to your point, because he was trusting the scheme. He was trusting the ability of his primary weapons. Like, yes, there were 9 different pass catchers that caught a ball, but these targets were funneled to Khalil Shakir, Dawson Knox, who I think had 5 targets, Dalton Kincaid, who I think had 5 or 6 targets in this game too, and then Brandon Cooks on some of those key deep shots as well. He funneled those opportunities within the structure of the scheme and chose the absolute perfect moments, to your point, to unleash the super bar and unlock the latter parts of the scheme that Joe Brady had always intended that Allen eventually get to. Now, you can still criticize Brady for not building in more variance at other, like points count in the second quarter too. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
like you can still score touchdowns in the first and second quarter. And I still think there's valid criticism there, but this was the first time that I had seen all season that Josh committed to the structure and Brady felt comfortable unleashing that structure on his own timetable.
Well, and I think too that, you know, the thing that we're still looking for, or we wish for, and we might never get from Joe Brady, is complexity that's not on a linear scale, because that's what this feels like. The offense feels like it is a chunk of plays in a segment that build on each other, but it's like it's the blockchain. It all goes in one direction, and there is, you know, you would want something where there's multiple channels or there's different, you know, but it just feels like the offense is a streamed situation down. It's linear and it can come out of many different formations, but it's kind of simplified and it is intended to build on itself and have answers for after we hit the James Cook wide zone. Oh my gosh, we have the counter to another running back who was just blocked to whomever, Ty Johnson in a different game of the season, Ray Davis in another game of the season, right? Like we have some plays off of it where we're going a completely different direction and everybody's flowing in the way that they got killed the last time. And we're not there, right? Like those magician balls look great, but you just wish you didn't have to get the 15-yard gain on the previous play to unlock that alternate opportunity. or that there was just different builds.
Correct. And listen, it's going to present a problem against a team, I would argue, like Houston, should we face Houston later on. Even a team like Denver, who we have coming up this Saturday, and we'll talk about more in the preview, that doesn't need to load the box so heavily like Jacksonville did to stop the run. If they can still free up linebackers to dart out and take away the Khalil Shakir screen while still shutting down James Cook, you know, that's when we're really going to see what Brady's scheme is made of. But in this particular game, man, this was a legitimate, talented defense. Josh trusted it. Brady executed it. Some flaws here and there. And ultimately, it got the Bills a win against, I would argue, a team that was far more talented on paper and had a lot of schematic advantages in this game, but were able to overcome it because of the connection and the buy-in from the QB to the OC scheme.
Yeah, absolutely. And at this point, when I look at the AFC field, Broncos, Houston, right? Like, I don't think there's another team other beyond those two that I'm really worried about. The Jaguars are one of the top three teams I was worried about in the matchups. Everyone, I think, is afraid of Houston. I don't think the Bills are ever going to go into a matchup with Houston and spam the five-man protections against that front.
Like, never going to happen again.
Like they did when they were in Houston. They seem to have learned from that massive mistake later in the season when they met up with other teams that had solid pass rushers like Pittsburgh and things like that. And they did not leave their tackles on islands against elite pass rushers.
Josh had seven guys in protection on some of these checks at the line this game, right? Like, and that's the other thing. Josh was masterful at the line of scrimmage in this game. I don't remember seeing on the broadcast a free rusher get loose. Like, Josh was a lot dialed in.
Only on the huge play near the end to Brandon Cooks, and that free rusher was intentionally left. They slid protection. If he was going to come, Josh was going to replace the blitz with the ball. And there was an open guy underneath. I don't remember who it was. It might have been Keon or Khalil. And Josh just went for the kill shot, the 40-yard bomb, right?
Because it was there, man.
Yeah.
It was there. Off his back foot with a rusher coming free in his face, like just Superman stuff. But I don't want to gloss over mentally what Josh did in this game. He looked elite pre-snap. He really did. He called a great game at the line. JJ, I want to move on. I want to talk about some of the other guys that contributed to this game. Old man Trey White.
Yes.
I put this out on social media. I was down on the Trey White signing. It felt like another retread. Yeah. And in fairness, in the first half of the season, he did not play great, right? He did not look like a player who had a whole lot left in the tank. Second half of the season rolls around, and it is vintage Trey White. He had three absolutely massive pass breakups in this game, including the one at the end where the ball gets tipped to Cole Bishop, seals the deal, ends the game for us. Trey White, I would argue, is the second MVP from this game.
Yeah, I would not disagree with that sentiment whatsoever. He, like you said, vintage Trey White. He looked like it. I don't remember who said it, but somebody was like, if Trey White didn't have injuries and looked good, this good at this stage of his career without those like gap years where like he left in free agency and like was dinged up, recovering, he'd probably be on pace for at least have another all pro, at least be in consideration for, if the Bills get a championship with him on the team, Hall of Fame, right? Like, he probably, his interception numbers would have been high in the seasons he was absent, right? Like, yeah, it's so sad in the NFL to see players that, like, you know, they have infinite levels of capability and talent, but it's just, you know, it's injuries. And so, yeah, no, Trey White looked amazing. He had, I think, three or four passes defensed. He tipped, of course, the game-winning interception to Cole Bishop was off of a Trey tip. And then he also appeared out of, I don't know, he like jumped in a portal on the right sideline and then emerged at another portal on the right hash to knock that tight end pass away near the goal line. Yeah, the Brenton Strange pass to Brenton Strange near the goal line. That was just like, I don't even know, he shot out of a cannon. Threw a hand up.
I mean, he looked like he was playing fast, and we know Trey is not like he's fast.
He never
compared
was.
To guys. He was yeah. never, but he was he's never exactly
compared
never
to. Don't
merchant.
Ever say
compared to, NFL,
compared to guys like us, dude. All right, there. I have at times frequented gyms, athletic facilities where people work out. Almost every person in there is faster than me, and they're just like random civilians from my small town, right? Like,
exactly.
Find some other comparison.
All right. We just want full context here. Like, we are two dudes that podcast from our living room saying that like a supremely talented athlete is not fast. But like, not a shot. Like relative to his peers, he is not fast.
Yes.
But it's always been the technician side of him. And man, he knew a lot of these Jacksonville wide receiver routes better than the wide receivers for Jacksonville did. And he was jumping routes. He was trusting his instincts. And that allowed him to play at a faster level, I think, than we have seen him play all season. It was just very impressive stuff out of Trey.
And with him here on a one-year deal, you kind of hope the Bills get something done if somebody doesn't entice him away. To keep him at the later stage.
I don't think he would leave. Yeah. I think this is the only place he wants to play. Yeah.
He did a media hit with Matty Glab for the team website that was basically that. Like he was like, it's a dream come true that I'm back here. This is the place I loved. I didn't want to leave, but I understand why I went, you know? And so, yeah, I think he would be back just for the pure purpose of if there's another CB in the draft and then also Harrison's development, right? Like these young CBs have to be learning from him because he seems the type who take that on and be serious about it.
Yep, without a doubt. Old man Shaq Thompson.
Yeah. Yeah.
I would argue the best offseason signing that Brandon Bee made. And I put Joey Bosa in there too, who we should listen, it shouldn't be all positives. We should talk about like definitely some of the stuff that'll need work heading into Denver. But man, Shaq Thompson, I mean, had the splash play, right?
Mm-hmm.
With the interception, I think it was in the first quarter against Trevor Lawrence.
Second drive.
But then again, just all over the field. The Bills were challenged to stop the run, but there was not a large quantity of runs they needed to stop. But he was everywhere he needed to be in pass protection. Like this is the 80-20 Sean McDermott defense that they want to roll out, where this is a defense that can stop 80% of the QBs in the league and will be shredded by the elite 20%. I would argue there's not anyone in that elite 20% other than maybe our guy who has left in this postseason, though. And Shaq Thompson was just fluid in coverage. And that's big because Terrell Bernard, who is their best coverage linebacker, he is still not healthy at this point. So to be able to lean on a guy like Shaq Thompson, who was dinged up in and of himself, I mean, it just allows this scheme to work so well and pass protection. Shift looks after the snap, confuse QBs with what they're seeing pre and post snap. I mean, it should not be undervalued what Shaq Thompson's value to this scheme is when it comes to being able to do those things.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that the bigger piece with Shaq Thompson is that you don't have a vulnerability. I think every other linebacker that they have presents some kind of vulnerability. Matt Milano has lost a step with multiple injuries. He is still great. Like his read and react is probably one of the best on the team. Up there and maybe even surpassing Shaq Thompson, but he does not have the elite juice. He has sparks of it. You see it sometimes, but it's not always there. And then Terrell Bernard, as you mentioned, great coverage linebacker, gets caught up in traffic in the run too often. And I think has been injured the entire season, has been kind of struggling through injury. So
that's what it looks like. Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know that he'll be back either for next week. So yeah, I mean, and then you have the ageless Jordan Poyer, who unfortunately tweaked the same hamstring that he had already injured and missed some time with. So worried about him. I think that they already ruled him out.
He's already ruled out for Saturday against Denver, yeah.
I feel like they have to take Hancock off the field and put Cam Lewis in for Jordan Poyer.
But you read my mind. I was going to, when we got to like some of the areas where we wouldn't need to adjust for Saturday, right?
We'll stay on kudos.
Yeah, we'll stay on kudos, but then we'll get to Hancock, Bosa.
We'll close it out. We'll close it out with all the bad stuff, which is the way that we do in this pad.
That's what we do, right? Compliment sandwich.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, no. Baruso, you know, I think in general, the coverage was connected. And that is, we've talked about that before too. When it was bad early in the season with pass defense, largely it was because they weren't connected. They weren't filling where they needed to fill. They weren't chained together and handing off, you know, receivers where they needed to. This game, they definitely were doing that. They were communicating and, you know, in that environment. It's actually interesting. I think it might be a little bit easier in the NFL to play defense on the road because the stadium Brown's is quiet
for the offense. They're
quiet for their offense. And so their communication looked excellent the whole game through. Yeah. Who else do you want to get to? Rousseau, you want to talk Rousseau now?
Let's talk about Greg Rousseau because, I mean, he had a sack, right? But he was in the backfield for the majority of this game.
Yeah.
I know the Jags had a lot of success running to the outside of tackles in this particular game. But a lot of that was, and again, I got to rewatch it, but by my count, just in my notebook, watching on the broadcast, that was almost exclusively to Joey Bosa's side of the field.
He was getting out of position all the time.
He was just like, he just could not keep contained in the run game at all. Have you ever seen the Dark Knight Rises? Yeah. You know, the Bane line when him and Batman are fighting in like the sewer or whatever it is. He's like, you fight like a younger man with nothing held back. That's exactly what Bosa was doing. Right. Yeah, he was playing like a wild out of control rookie at a lot of times. Yeah.
As if he had the recovery speed to correct all of the mistakes he was making with his rush choices. Yeah.
Right. But so, I mean, but that listen, man, people don't want to run to Greg Rousseau's side of the field. That's great. You know what I mean? And then in pass rush, he won his one-on-ones against.
Right.
Not a elite, but I think a very stout group of offensive tackles in this game for Jacksonville.
Yeah, and I think that, you know, we can definitely on the preview show, we'll talk a lot more about the Broncos. They're going to have to step up even more.
That's a different
That's the best offensive line probably in the NFL.
Yeah.
Up there with the Bills and Seattle. I don't know. Who do you think is?
I would say Seattle, which is crazy to think about because they've never had a good offensive line. I would say Seattle. I would probably throw the LA Rams in there a little bit, right? Our guys, and then Denver's clear heads and tails number one.
Yeah, so it's going to be different, but I do think, you know, I liked what I saw from Rousseau. I thought that Deion Walker had some good snaps. He was taking a snap share over almost every defensive tackle in this game, so he's sort of elevated, especially in a game where they. Ogunjobi's a healthy scratch. That's a crap signing.
That sure is. We're going to keep it positive, that's a guy maybe after he was suspended, we probably should have got rid of him in the preseason.
Cut that contract up.
Yeah.
So, yeah. What else you got to get to?
We have to talk about McDermott, man, because he has caught flack everywhere in Bills Mafia. There are still people after this game screaming, fire McDermott. Listen, I have my own concerns. If Joe Brady goes to a college coaching job and Sean McDermott is asked to pick the guy to rebuild this offense for the fourth time, I've got real concerns about that. I no longer have concerns about his game management. He was flawless in this game. He called a great game, made all the right decisions on challenges. I understand the argument for maybe fans wanting to take a knee on that first down just in the before the go-ahead possession where Josh Tush pushed it in. I understand wanting to run more time off the clock, but I think it is paramount that you score there. And I like the fact that McDermott ripped the Band-Aid off and then trusted his defense, which had been muddying the picture on Trevor Lawrence all day, trusting his defense to go out there and get 59 seconds of stops, knowing that the opposing team was in a must-pass situation. Yeah. So I loved it. Well,
how badly do you think Bills Mafia would have unanimously pooped their pants if they scored and there was only 13 seconds left after like a kneel? And I was thinking about Team of Destiny. Yeah, in that moment, I was like waiting for that to happen because I'm like, oh. I won't be able to watch the last play.
Right. Exactly. Yeah. No, it would have been Jacksonville's a team of destiny. They're the new Chiefs, right? It'd be crazy. Yep. No, I liked it. I liked everything about how McDermott handled this game. And he's winning challenges now.
Yeah.
It's like a switch has flipped and all of a sudden, like the man who hadn't won a challenge in his first like decade in the league as a head coach, now all of a sudden is on a little bit of a hot streak, which I love. He's making great decisions.
I think it's delegation. I think they ended up just, do you remember like, because I don't know, most Bills fans don't pay this close of attention, but I think we both do. Where like it's like blah 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 is announced as the new like game day analysis assistant, and like every year there's like a new hiring and you never see a firing. I feel like there's a team of like 29 Poindexters in a box somewhere just like crunching numbers and being like, challenge it, you know.
Yep. Yeah, so go for it.
Just go for it. Good job delegating, McDermott. Yes.
Thank you, nerds. Thank you, nerds, for helping Sean McDermott. We appreciate you. But yeah, man, I mean, I think, and there's some other flowers to go around. Obviously, Khalil Shakir for his reliability in this game. I mean, again, if he is not as effective at those 4 yards, 3 yards, 5 yards, 6 yards on that peppering of screens, I mean, this game looks a lot different and a lot of these opportunities don't open up. So his ability to be a great pass catcher, a security blanket for Josh, I think was a huge one too. And then, I mean, listen, credit to Dalton Kincaid and Dawson Knox too. Like they didn't hit the over on the 11 and a half receptions I thought they would. Mm-hmm. I was a little bit surprised we weren't using tight ends more in this game. Yeah. It might have made our life and Josh's life a little bit easier, especially early on, but they too secured all their opportunities. I mean, Dawson Knox has had big drop issues his entire career, and he proved to be really reliable. And then freaking Dalton Kincaid just streaking down the sideline on that touchdown in the fourth quarter was just poetry in motion. That he looks like a great wide receiver. When I watch him play, I do not see a tight end.
No, I know. Yeah, I know. He's especially talented. He feels a little bit like his story. I hope his story doesn't go the way of Trey White's, because that's the other thing, is injuries have derailed so much of his potential. The Bills put him on the shelf or snap limit him game after game because he's got this knee thing that's like recurring for 2 years now. And then I continue to be worried about. So at this time, let's revisit our predictions.
Let's do it.
We both picked the Bills to win by 3 points. I had 31-28. You had 34-31. So
pretty good.
We were really close to the final score. Just a little bit higher with production. And then I had Joey Bosa over 1.5 sacks. He had no sacks at all.
He had a bad game. Tough watch. Like, he's been bad in run contain all season. Like, I don't want to pin the run defense issues on him. Terrell Bernard stinks in the run. We've talked about this. Like there are a lot of big issues with the run game, but the fact that teams feel so comfortable running to his side of the ball, knowing that he will not keep contained. Man, even some of his pass rush reps, like, I can't remember what quarter it was, but it's when we had Jacksonville backed up into their own end zone, right? Mm. And Bosa, like a man, had he just taken the outside loop?
It would have been a safety.
His assignment, it was easy safety. And instead, he cuts it inside and leaves his entire field assignment open for Trevor Lawrence to scamper for 35 yards. Like, I like what Bosa's brought to the table this year. I also think, like, that dude needs to take a sleeping pill or a trank before a game and just bring it down a couple of notches.
I think that we hope to see, so Bosa playing for the Chargers for so many years, we hope to see a rejuvenated and more dialed in Joey Bosa for this Denver game, because this is a known opponent to him for years in a known stadium for his entire career. Let's see what Joey brings in the Denver divisional round, and before we like stamp him a, you know, failure in the playoffs. But, and I know you weren't doing that anyway, but
doing that. Like, but he's got a lot to clean up. Like, he's always rushing the passer. Like, Jacksonville could have been in the Wildcat and running out of the backfield with Travis Etienne. He'd be like, kill the quarterback. Right. Yeah, like, he's got to modulate. Like, he's got a situational awareness, man.
He runs away from the box to where Trevor Lawrence is lined up at receiver and just like
pushes him into the sideline. Yeah, yeah. Right. Got him. No, he's a maniac, but in the wrong ways. You know who he reminds me of? Yannick Ngakoue. You remember that guy?
Yeah, that guy,
no matter what, would just run to the QB in as straight a line as humanly possible. Right.
Even EJ Manuel could get him on a slip screen. Right.
Yes. Like, yes. Just, I mean, anything you want to do offensively, slip screen, a QB run, outside zone, just run it to Bosa's side of the field, because all he's thinking about is killing the QB.
Yeah, no doubt.
Yeah.
I will say, you know, on that, you mentioned the Bosa play where he had a surefire safety if he just would have stayed in his rush lane. Mitch Wishnowsky with the freaking prettiest coffin corner kick I ever saw. I thought the refs messed that one up and it should have been spotted at like the half yard mark. But, you know, they have a chip in the ball they don't use. So we'll trust their old man eyeballs.
Please get this right. Spotting the ball was a little bit rough in this game too.
Yeah. Yep.
We kind of talked about Jordan Hancock. I'm 50-50 with you that Cam Lewis should be getting more reps. I just think Cam Lewis has been an underrated piece of this defense, and I like it when he's on the field. And if we can get Johnson and him on the field together at some point, with Lewis in the safety role, especially now with Poyer ruled out, I like that, because we don't lose anything in run fits with Lewis on the field. Mm-hmm. And I do think he's plus in coverage. Part of me is like, do you let Hancock take his lumps in this particular case? But it's the postseason. You got to pull out all the stops. I agree. I want to see more Cam Lewis, because I think Hancock had he played like a rookie. Like, he had a rookie game playing for the first time in the playoffs.
He had a hard time. Yeah.
Yes, he really did. I mean, outside of that, man, I don't have too many more complaints about this game. I mean, it was really solid. Really solid all the way around. We will do a preview pod for all of you listening at home here, and we'll fully dig into this Denver Broncos game. But JJ, any early thoughts that you want people to keep in mind as we head into a week here, but as we prep for the pod?
Yeah. With my like kind of Bills buddies, you know, Facebook Messenger group chat, which you would absolutely be part of if you use that particular social media app.
What's the app?
It's Facebook Messenger.
I don't use that.
You can't, yeah, exactly. You don't use Facebook. So
I am not on any social media. I just manage what we have for the pod. I don't have any personal social media.
That's good for you. Yeah. You recommended a book to me about that, and I never read it. So anyway,
this is good. Thank you for your honesty.
To get all the way in the longest way possible around to my point, somebody in there was making fun of me as the, you know, the Scatman song, like skid, 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 dot, and boop, like that song. He sent a message and was like, huh, I don't know anything about these Denver Broncos, and then started singing Scatman at his desk at his work job until my message popped up, because he changes the word Scatman to Statman. Because that's my role in the group. I'm just like, well, let's dig into it. All right. Yep. So I checked all the defensive DBOAs, offensive DBOAs, and my assessment for everyone listening in the most simplified fashion: Denver is better as a pass defense, worse as a run defense, but only slightly, because they're still a very good run defense. They are better on offense with being balanced, not as much relying on the pass as the Jaguars are. And Denver's outside receivers are not as skilled. Bo Nix is on the same level as Trevor Lawrence. That's my summary.
That's a good
better offensive line. Their sack percentage is like less than half of Jaguars. Yeah, so Russo's not getting a sack against the Denver Broncos.
Right. I agree. It'll be interesting for me to see. One of the things that I'm really going to dig into, Liam Cohen got a lot of, I think, criticism for not running the ball more when it was obviously working with Bashal Tutin and Travis Etienne. I mean, I think together they only combined for something like 14 carries, and they averaged close to 10 yards a carry combined between the two. I mean, just the run defense, our run defense sucks. I wonder if Sean Payton is going to put Bo Nix in mothballs and just be like, especially in that altitude, gas this Buffalo Bills defense early by pounding the rock, take it all out of them, and then unleash Bo Nix a little bit in the second half of the game to in a pull away situation, depending on where the game script is. I still feel like the vulnerability of this team is an opposing head coach being like, you know what? This is QB optional today, guys, because if you can get 10 yards, 7 yards a carry, that is as good, if not better, than passing the ball on this Buffalo Bills defense, right? Yeah. So why wouldn't you in the yardage economy make that choice? So I feel like the team that, if there is a team that knocks off the Bills, they're going to decide to just mothball their QB. And Liam Cohen didn't, and I get it. Again, we've been saying it. Dance with what got you there. And this is a pass-forward team. He's got a lot of confidence in his young QB, justifiably so. And Trevor Lawrence, outside of that pick at the end of the game, was pretty automatic in the fourth quarter. Like, had Josh Allen not done Josh Allen things at the end of that game, we might be talking about Trevor Lawrence with one of the better fourth quarter performances for a QB we've seen in a long time in the playoffs.
Yeah, you were right before. Travis Etienne and Bashal Tutin combined for 14 carries. Bashal Tutin averaged almost 13 yards a carry, and Travis Etienne averaged almost 7. So
give me a break, right?
Yeah, and they got away from it. And thank you teams. I think we talked about this in the preview pod. Thank you teams for getting a little bit scared of Josh Allen and abandoning your run in the third and fourth quarters of games. Like, that's amazing. Keep doing that.
Yes, please do. Please ultimately do that. Yes, we appreciate you. But yeah, man, that's all I got. It was a great win, a gutty, hard-nosed win. And they're going to need a couple more of these if they're going to make it to the Super Bowl, because it's just a hard road from here going up against a defense as talented as Denver. But I'm looking forward to it, man. I'm looking forward to breaking it down on the preview pod as well.
Two more games, and then they could be in the Super Bowl. Two more games. Yeah, that's all we need.
We just need one before we die. But there will be definitely more than one more episode of this pod coming up. So for all of you listening at home, like, share, and subscribe, as always, wherever you get your pods. Hit us up on YouTube, Apple, and Spotify. And as always, go Bills.
Go Bills.